are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProcPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition. Today, I think the Democratic Party committed suicide. They don't know it yet, but they did, because their coup attempt is being exposed in glorious technicolor. And what's ironic about it, and it's almost poetic justice, the person who led the charge, Adam Schiff, is chairman of the House committee. He's also a notorious liar, and he was exposed today for what he is, because he made a big mistake. He did a parody in front of television cameras that was exactly the opposite of what is in the, I want to say, transcripts. It's the notes of the conversation that President Trump had with President Zelensky of the Ukraine. But before I go into this, how was this coup set up? You need a trigger, if you will, because what they're trying to do under the cover of an impeachment inquiry. Note, they haven't not called the vote for an impeachment. They don't have articles of impeachment. And that's the first key step. You better have actual crimes with evidence. They don't have any crimes and they don't have any evidence. Not that that stops them. They'll just make it up. And apparently that's what's going on here. I think this is an organized smear campaign, and you'll see why I say this. And they were caught out on it. They were using the cover of a whistleblower. News reports are saying it's a CIA whistleblower that was, for a while, temporarily assigned to the White House and reassigned. But the big problem with his complaint is he has no first-hand knowledge. He wasn't in on the conversation. In other words, what he's complaining about is hearsay. What other people, some that may have been on the conversation, others that weren't, said. In court, judges routinely will rule out any hearsay. And where you have an adversarial system, which we do in the United States, that's a legitimate objection. As a matter of fact, it's a very common objection. Hearsay, Your Honor, and the judge say, yes, it is, objection sustained. The best thing I can do is let you hear. I have a number of clips. I have three clips. One is of the acting DNI, Director of National Intelligence, a retired admiral that has served his country well. I think he's a straight arrow. He has made it, in my mind, he has a very impressive record, and he's what I would expect any high-level government official to be, honest and telling the truth. And he explains the situation he found himself in. You need to keep in mind that the President of the United States was elected by the American people, something that the Democratic Party, especially the radical extremist Democratic Party, have not accepted. And they're trying to impeach, and I dare them to hold the vote. If they hold the vote, the American people, in my mind, what you're trying to do is override an election, and it will not sit well with the American people, and will guarantee Donald Trump will get reelected. So I'm going to play a significant part of the opening statement of the DNI, where he explains what he did. Now, I'm for protecting whistleblowers. Let me say this. I have no problem, and that's why I was impressed with this former admiral that we're not trying to out the whistleblower, but it's becoming increasingly clear this is a partisan whistleblower. You see, you need to have the ball rolling again. They were relying and hoping that the Mueller report would find that Donald Trump did collude or conspire with the Russians. No, he didn't. The best way I can say this, the first coup was about the Russians and Trump conspiring. This coup is about Donald Trump supposedly colluding with the Ukrainians and committing a crime in the process when a number of people have reviewed this transcript of the conversation. There's no crime here, folks. There's no crime. And that's the problem that the Democrats have fallen into. They didn't think that the President of the United States would release unclassified, and there's very little, if anything, classified. This is what I would call, at best, sensitive or confidential information. That still, if it's confidential, would be classified, but it's low level. It's not top secret stuff. It's a conversation between two heads of state. So what the Democrats have been complaining about and what the Intelligence Committee was trying to get, and they got it today, is the complaint of the whistleblower. But right before they got the complaint, what happened? Trump played an important card. He unclassified his conversation, and that pulled the rug right out from under this Democrat plot. And it's another plot. Oh, yeah, they're conspirators. And Trump is mad. He has a right to be mad. Remember early in the Trump administration, he had telephone conversations with first the president of Mexico and then the prime minister of Australia, and both of those conversations leaked out. No president should be subject to that. If you're working in the White House, especially if you're working and you're on these calls, the substance of those calls should not leak out. And since then, we've had few, and this is one of them, where they have leaked out. The problem is leakers, and that frustrates Democrat and Republican presidents. These calls between heads of state are usually in the Situation Room. You do have a number of people listening in and taking notes. You have translators. This was about a 30-minute call, but you got translations involved. So it was probably a 15 to 20 minute call. And then the rest were the fact that you had translations on both sides. And there's nothing really here. Although they tried to say there was a quid pro quo. No. What President Trump was asking the president is to look into, in other words, investigate, Joe Biden and his son regarding Burisma. It was the gas company that Hunter Biden worked for and was getting a lot of money from, a consulting fee of $50,000 a month. What it looks like is a payoff or bribe. And that was what you had three prosecutors. Keep this in mind, because this gets confusing. And I'm giving you too many details. The first prosecutor, and this is the one that Joe Biden got fired, had an investigation going on into this company, as well as the consulting fees given to Hunter Biden. And it was Joe Biden that wanted this shut down and told the Ukrainian government if they didn't shut it down, if they didn't fire this prosecutor, and in turn the investigation goes away, they would not be getting $1 billion. See, that's the scandal, and that was out there. That was out there. He was replaced by another prosecutor and then a third prosecutor because we have a new president. He's appointing his own people. Keep that in mind. That can be confusing. And I probably will get into this a little bit more later because the president's personal attorney, former mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, was asked by the State Department to talk to the Ukrainians because they had a lot of information on Ukrainians interfering with, yes, the 2016 election. Now, why the sudden rush to an impeachment inquiry? Sometime in October, the Inspector General of the Justice Department is going to make his report. Now, it's about the abuse of the FISA process, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act process, that the outcome of that was to get a warrant on Carter Page, which in turn, he was a minor advisor to Donald Trump, a volunteer, if you will. And that resulted in the spying on, yes, Donald Trump and his campaign. And they misused the process. process. They didn't tell the FISA court that, one, the Clinton campaign paid for the opposition research, that, in other words, the Christopher Steele dossier, which was the key bit of evidence that was used to support this application, was in fact bought and paid for opposition research. Bought and paid for opposition research, not only by the Clinton campaign, by the Democratic National Committee as well. Why is that important? Any judge knowing that would never have granted the warrant. So they made sure that the judge was not, that was not highlighted. Now, what's the other thing that's a requirement of any FISA warrant? The information has to be verified by the FBI. The FBI could not verify this. The information was based, again, on Russian disinformation funneled through Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer, and it was salacious information. There's no newspaper in this country, legitimate newspaper, I would say, would publish this during the 2016 election because there's no way they could verify any of it. Again, it's hearsay. In this case, it's hearsay on hearsay. It's that bad. They fear, first of all, the FISA Inspector General report, point one. Point two, what they really fear, though, because the Inspector General can't prosecute anybody, they fear that a U.S. attorney has been appointed by the Attorney General Bill Barr, and he's in Connecticut, John Durham, and he has the power to not only investigate, but go to the grand jury and indict. So there are kind of two major revelations that are coming down the track that are going to be big stories. There's no way you can ignore them, and it's going to be damaging to the Democratic Party, especially Hillary Clinton, their campaign, and the former Barack Obama administration. It's going to hit the fan. That's another way to say it. To muddy the waters, they're trying to, as quickly as they can, try to impeach Donald Trump. Well, good luck with that, because they don't have the support of the American people. They might think they do. And they're trying to rush it, hoping that the IG report is not out. And I'm talking Department of Justice, Inspector General report, investigation into the FISA warrant. Think of it as spying on Trump. That's all illegal, folks. They think they had their you-know-what covered with this warrant. No, not if it was illegally obtained. So we have high government officials in the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the White House in on this. And they know it would critically damage the Democratic Party as well as candidates running, and all representatives are up for re-election next November. That's why they're panicking. That's why they're lying. That's why they're rushing. They're trying to come up with anything that can confuse you, blow smoke in your face. But in the process of doing that, what are they doing? This is a coup, folks. It's really a coup under the cover of we're doing an impeachment inquiry. It's not going to work. It's so transparent, too many people understand exactly what's going on. So with that background, what I want to play is the Intelligence Committee had a hearing today to hear from the acting DNI, Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire, and here is his opening statement. Now, the first part of it is his background. I could have cut it out, but I decided not to. I really think it's time to hear from what I would call a civil servant that has integrity and is doing his job. But the latter part of this clip, so bear with the introduction. Normally I wouldn't play it, but this gentleman I think was impressive, and he did answer a lot of questions. This was over a 3-hour hearing. But after he gives a brief synopsis or summary of his prior government service, he goes into why they delayed giving a copy of the complaint to the Intelligence Committee. They have to provide this complaint by law. So let's hear DNI Joseph McGuire. He's an actor.
Chairman Schiff, Ranking Member Nunez, and members of the committee, good morning. I'd like to begin by thanking the chairman and the committee for agreeing to postpone this hearing for 1 week. This provided sufficient time to allow the executive branch to successfully complete its consultations regarding how to accommodate the committee's request. Mr. Chairman, I've told you this on several occasions, and I would like to say this publicly. I respect you, I respect this committee, and I welcome and take seriously the committee's oversight role. During my confirmation process to be the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, I told the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence that congressional oversight of the intelligence activities is critical and essential to successful operations with the intelligence community. Having served as the director of the National Counterterrorism Center for 8 months and as the acting director of national intelligence for the past 6 weeks, I continue to believe strongly that the role of congressional oversight. As I pledge to the Senate, I pledge to you today that I will continue to work closely with Congress while I'm serving either in this capacity as acting director of national counterterrorism or when I return to the National Counterterrorism Center, to ensure you are fully and currently informed of intelligence activities to facilitate your ability to perform your oversight of the intelligence community. The American people expect us to keep them safe. The intelligence community cannot do that without this committee's support. Before I turn to the matter of hand, there are a few things I would like to say. I am not partisan, and I am not political. I believe in a life of service, and I am honored to be a public servant. I served under 8 presidents while I was in uniform. I have taken the oath to the Constitution 11 times, the first time when I was sworn into the United States Navy in 1974, and 9 times during my subsequent promotions in the United States Navy. Most recently, former Director Dan Coats administered the oath of office last December when I became the director of the National Counterterrorism Center. I agree with you. The oath is sacred. It's the foundation of our Constitution. The oath to me means not only that I swear a true faith and allegiance to that sacred document, but more importantly, I view it as a covenant I have with my workforce that I lead and every American, that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of my office. I come from a long line of public servants who have stepped forward even in the most difficult times and austere times to support and defend our country. When I took my uniform off in July of 2010, it was the first time in 70 years that an immediate member of my family was not wearing the cloth of the nation. As a Naval Special Warfare Officer, I had the honor of commanding at every level in the SEAL community. It was at times very demanding, but the rewards of serving in America's Special Operations community more than make up for the demands. After my retirement, I was fortunate to work for a great private sector firm. I left the business world after 3 years to lead a nonprofit charity. Some questioned why I would leave a promising business career to run a charity. The answer was quite simple. It was another opportunity to serve. I led a foundation dedicated to honoring the sacrifice of our fallen and severely wounded special operators. The foundation I led enabled hundreds of children of our fallen to attend college. It was extremely meaningful and rewarding. In the winter of 2018, I was asked by former Director Dan Coats to return to government service to lead the National Counterterrorism Center. This request was totally unexpected and was not a position I sought. But then again, it was another opportunity to serve my country. In particular, I knew that many of the young sailors and junior officers that I had trained 20 years earlier were now senior combat veterans, deploying and still sacrificing. I decided if they could continue to serve, returning to government service was the very least I could do. And now, here I am, sitting before you as the acting director of national intelligence. With last month's departure of Dan Coats and Sue Gordon, two exceptional leaders and friends, I was asked to step into their very big shoes and lead the intelligence community until the president nominates and the Senate confirms the next director of national intelligence. I accepted this responsibility because I love this country. I have a deep and profound respect for the men and women of our intelligence community and the mission we execute every day on behalf of the American people. Throughout my career, I have served and led through turbulent times. I have governed every action by the following criteria. It must be legal, it must be moral, and it must be ethical. No one can take an individual's integrity away. It can only be given away. If every action meets those criteria, you will always be a person of integrity. In my nearly 4 decades of public service, my integrity has never been questioned until now. I'm here today to to unequivocally state that as acting DNI, I will continue the same faithful and nonpartisan support in a matter that adheres to the Constitution and the laws of this great country as long as I serve in this position for whatever period of time that may be. I want to make it clear that I have upheld my responsibility to follow the law every step of the way in the matter that is before us today. I want to also state my support for a whistleblower and rights and the laws. Whistleblowing has a long history in our country, dating back to the Continental Congress. This is not surprising, because as a nation, we desire for good government. Therefore, we must protect those who demonstrate courage to report alleged wrongdoing, whether on the battlefield or in the workplace. Indeed, at the start of ethics training in the executive branch each year, we are reminded that public service is a public trust. And as public servants, we have a solemn responsibility to do what's right, which includes reporting concerns of waste, fraud, and abuse, and bringing such matters to the attention of Congress under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. I applaud all employees who come forward under this act. I am committed to ensuring that all whistleblower complaints are handled appropriately and to protecting the rights of whistleblowers. In this case, the complainant raised a matter with the Intelligence Community Inspector General. The Inspector General is properly protecting the complainant's identity and will not permit the complainant to be subject to any retaliation or adverse consequences for communicating the complaint to the Inspector General. Upholding the integrity of the intelligence community and the workforce is my number one priority. Throughout my career, I relied on the men and women of the intelligence community to do their jobs so I could do mine, and I could personally attest that their efforts saved lives. I would now like to turn to the complaint and provide a general background on how we got to where we are today. On August 26th, the Inspector General forwarded a complaint to me from an employee in the intelligence community. The Inspector General stated that the complaint raised an urgent concern, a legally defined term under Whistleblower Protection Act that has been discussed at length in our letters to the committee on September 16 and 17. Before I turn to the discussion about whether the complaint meets the definition of urgent concern, I first want to talk about an even more fundamental issue. Upon reviewing the complaint, we were immediately struck by the fact that many of the allegations in the complaint are based on a conversation between the president and another foreign leader. Such calls are typically subject to executive privilege. As a result, we consulted with the White House Counsel's Office, and we were advised that much of the information in the complaint was, in fact, subject to executive privilege, a privilege that I do not have the authority to waive. Because of that, we were unable to immediately share the details of the complaint with this committee, but continued to consult with the White House counsels in an effort to do so. Yesterday, the president released the transcripts of the call in question, and therefore, we are now able to disclose the details of both complaint and the Inspector General's letter transmitting to us. As a result, I have provided the House and Senate Intelligence Committees with the full, unredacted complaint, as well as the Inspector General's letter. Let me also discuss the issue of urgent concern. When transmitting a complaint to me, the Inspector General took the legal position that because the complaint alleges matters of urgent concern, and because he found the allegations to be credible, I was required under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act to forward the complaint to our oversight committees within 7 days of receiving it. As we have previously explained in our letters, urgent concern is a statutorily defined term. To be an urgent concern, the allegations must, in addition to being classified, assert a flagrant, serious problem, abuse, or violation of law, and relate to the funding, administration, or operation of an intelligence activity within the responsibility of the Director of National Intelligence. However, this complaint concerns conduct by someone outside the intelligence community, unrelated to funding, administration, or operation of an intelligence activity under my supervision. Because the allegation on the face did not appear to fall in the statutory framework, my office consulted the United States Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel, and included the Inspector General in those consultations. After reviewing the complaint and the Inspector General's transmittal letter, the Office of Legal Counsel determined that the complaint's allegations do not meet the statutory requirement, definition concern, legal, urgent concern, and found that I was not legally required to transmit the material to our Oversight Committee under the Whistleblower Protection Act. An unclassified version of that Office of Legal Counsel memo was publicly released. As you know, for those of us in the executive branch, Office of Legal Counsel opinions are binding on all of us. In particular, the Office of Legal Counsel opinion states that the president is not a member of the intelligence community, and the communication with the foreign leader involved no intelligence operation or activity aimed at collecting or analyzing foreign intelligence. While this OLC opinion did not require transmission of the complaint to the committees, it did leave me with the discretion to forward the complaint to the committee. However, given the executive privilege issues I discussed, neither the Inspector General nor I were able to share the details of the complaint at the time. When the Inspector General informed me that he still intended to notify the committees of the existence of the complaint, Mr. Chairman, I supported that decision to ensure the committees were kept as informed as possible of this process move forward. I want to raise a few other points about the situation we find ourselves in. First, I want to stress that I believe that the whistleblower and the Inspector General have acted in good faith throughout. I have every reason to believe that they have done everything by the book and followed the law. Respecting the privileged nature of the information and patiently waiting while the executive privilege issues were resolved. Wherever possible, we have worked in partnership with the Inspector General on this matter. While we have different opinions on the issue whether or not it is an urgent concern, I strongly believe in the role of the Inspector General. I greatly value the independence he brings to and his dedication and his role in keeping me and the committees informed of matters within the Intelligence Committee. Second, although executive privilege prevented us from sharing the details of the complaint with the committees until recently, this does not mean that the complaint was ignored. The Inspector General, in consultation with my office, referred this matter to the Department of Justice for investigation. Finally, I appreciate that in the past, whistleblower complaints may have been provided to Congress regardless of whether they were deemed credible or satisfied the urgent concern requirement. However, I am not familiar with any prior instances where a whistleblower complaint touched on such complicated and sensitive issues, including executive privilege. I believe that this matter is unprecedented. I also believe that I handle this matter in full compliance with the law at all times, and I am committed to doing so, sir. I appreciate the committee providing me this opportunity to discuss this matter and the ongoing commitment to work with the Congress on your important oversight role. Thank you very much, sir.
Now, that was the opening statement of the acting DNI, Director of National Intelligence, in the Trump administration, a former naval officer who served his country for over 30 years, primarily in SEAL special operations. And I found what he said totally credible. This is what I would expect and hope of anyone that serves his country, whether it's the military or the government. I'm rather idealistic. Unfortunately, we have politicians that have, unfortunately, a well-deserved reputation for lying. It seems like a occupational hazard. Now, I know that all human beings lie, but is the magnitude and frequency that, and I'm talking about the chairman of this committee, Adam Schiff, that's sheer stunning. And in a minute, I will play what I thought very revealing. Adam Schiff big time made a mistake, and I think lost any, if he had any credibility left, he lost it. But first, I'd like to play the questions of the ranking member of this committee, former chairman of the committee, Devin Nunes from California. First, his opening statement, and then his questioning of the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence.
Thank the gentleman. I want to congratulate the Democrats on the rollout of their latest information warfare operation against the president. and their extraordinary ability to once again enlist the mainstream media in their campaign. This operation began with media reports from the prime instigators of the Russia collusion hoax, that a whistleblower is claiming President Trump made nefarious promise to a foreign leader. The released transcript of that call has already debunked that central assertion. But that didn't matter. The Democrats simply moved the goalposts and began claiming that there doesn't need to be a quid pro quo for this conversation to serve as the basis for impeaching the president. Speaker Pelosi went further when asked earlier if she would put brakes on impeachment if the transcript turned out to be benign. She responded, quote, "So there you go. If the whistleblower operation doesn't work out, the Democrats and their media, we have candidates, quote, we have many candidates for impeachable offenses." That was her quote. So there you go. If the whistleblower operation doesn't work out, the Democrats and their media assets can always drum up something else. And what other information has come to light since the original false report of a promise being made? We've learned the following. The complaint relied on hearsay evidence provided by the whistleblower. The inspector general did not know the contents of the phone call at issue. The inspector general found the whistleblower displayed arguable political bias against Trump. The Department of Justice investigated the complaint and determined no action was warranted. The Ukrainian president denies being pressured by President Trump. So once again, this supposed scandal ends up being nothing like what we were told. And once again, the Democrats, their media mouthpieces, and a cabal of leakers are ginning up a fake story with no regard to the monumental damage they're causing to our public institutions and to trust in government. And without acknowledging all the false stories they propagated in the past, including countless allegations that Trump campaign colluded with Russia to hack the 2016 election. We're supposed to forget about all those stories, but believe this one. In short, what we have with this storyline is another still dossier. I'll note here that in the Democrats' mania to overturn the 2016 elections, everything they touch gets hopelessly politicized. With the Russia hoax, it was our intelligence agencies which were turned into a political weapon to attack the president. And now today, the whistleblower process is the casualty. Until about a week ago, the need to protect that process was a primary bipartisan concern of this committee. But if the Democrats were really concerned with defending that process, they would have pursued this matter with a quiet, sober inquiry, as we do for all whistleblowers. But that would have been useless for them. They don't want answers. They want a public spectacle. And so we've been treated to an unending parade of press releases, press conferences, and fake news stories. This hearing itself is another example. Whistleblower inquiries should not be held in public at all. As our Senate counterparts, both Democrats and Republicans, obviously understand, their hearing with Mr. McGuire is behind closed doors. But again, that only makes sense when your goal is to get information, not to create a media frenzy. The current hysteria has something else in common with the Russia hoax. Back then, they accused the Trump campaign of colluding with Russians when the Democrats themselves were colluding with Russians in preparing the Steele dossier. Today, they accuse the president of pressuring Ukrainians to take actions that would help himself or hurt his political opponents. And yet, there are numerous examples of Democrats doing the exact same thing. Joe Biden bragged that he extorted the Ukrainians into firing a prosecutor who happened to be investigating Biden's own son. Three Democratic senators wrote a letter pressuring the Ukrainian general prosecutor to reopen the investigation. Into former Trump campaign officials. Another Democratic senator went to Ukraine and pressured the Ukrainian president not to investigate corruption allegations involving Joe Biden's son. According to Ukrainian officials, the Democratic National Committee contractor Alexandra Chalupa tried to get Ukrainian officials to provide dirt on Trump associates and tried to get the former Ukrainian president to comment publicly on alleged ties to Russia. Ukrainian official Sergei Lashenko was a source for Nellie Orr, wife of Department of Justice official Bruce Orr, as she worked on the anti-Trump operation conducted by Fusion GPS and funded by the Democrats. And of course, Democrats on this very committee negotiated with people who they thought were Ukrainians in order to obtain nude pictures of Trump. People can reasonably ask why the Democrats are so determined to impeach this president when in just a year they'll have a chance. In fact, one Democratic congressman, one of the first to call for Trump's impeachment, gave us the answer when he said, quote, "I'm concerned that if we don't impeach the president, he will get reelected," unquote. Winning elections is hard, and when you compete, you have no guarantee you'll win. But the American people do have a say in this, and they made their voices heard in the last presidential election. This latest gambit by the Democrats to overturn the people's mandate is unhinged and dangerous. They should end the entire dishonest, grotesque spectacle and get back to work to solving problems, which is what every member of this committee was sent here to do. Judging by today's charade, the chances of that happening anytime soon are zero to none. I yield back.
Now, that was Congressman Nunes, former chairman, now ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. I played it because it does summarize a lot of information, and I really see and emphasize what in my introductory, what's driving this? Why now? Because the, not to be confused with the intelligence community's Inspector General, the Department of Justice Inspector General, it's anticipated in the next 30 days, maybe sooner, will be releasing his report. And that's what they're fearing, that a number of high Democrat high officials, including the Attorney General of the United States, Loretta Lynch, the former FBI Director James Comey, his deputy, and also the deputy in the Department of Justice. They signed the FISA applications, and a requirement of all FISA applications is the information in the application must be verified. This information could not be verified. It was salacious. It was Russian-provided disinformation. And like I said, who paid for it? Who bought this? The Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. It was made up dirt, made up, they call this leverage. And it was designed, and their purpose was thinking that they would come up with something. They came up with nothing. And then after they lost the election, they were using this to try to delegitimize the Trump election. They failed, even though a special counsel was appointed. You see, they also are concerned that the U.S. attorney is looking into the crimes that were committed. And he has the power of subpoena in investigating and taking the evidence to the grand jury. They know this is coming, and they're trying to distract you by this. And they stumbled badly. They badly stumbled. They thought this was going to be the gotcha. We finally got him, Donald Trump. No, people that are hurting because of this are the American people, and they're watching, and they're going to come to their own conclusions. And I think there are many Democrats that are going to lose because of this. This is not playing well with the majority of the American people that are decent, law-abiding, and fair. This should never happen in America, and the Democrats have no shame and really no credibility because they have to lie about what really happened. Now I want to play the questions of Representative Nunes to the witness, DNI Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire.
Welcome, Mr. Director. It's a pleasure to have you here. And you're going to be part of a charade of legal word games. They're going to try to get you to say something that can be repeated by the media that is here that wants to report this story. I just want to get one thing straight, because one of the quotes they're going to use from you is you saying that this was a credible complaint. That will be used and spun as you're saying that it was true. And I want to give you an opportunity to, you have not investigated the veracity or the truthfulness of this complaint.
That's correct, Ranking Member. The determination on credible was made by the IC Inspector General. He made the determination that it is credible, and he also made the determination of urgent concern. My question was not, I did not question his judgment there. The question I had was, does in fact this allegation of wrongdoing meet the criteria, the statutory criteria of urgent concern? And the other issue, as I said, complicated things. Did it, in fact, the allegations within this whistleblower complaint involve executive privilege?
Thank you for clarifying that. Have you ever, you mentioned it a little bit in your testimony, but have you ever or are you aware of any former DNIs who have testified about whistleblower complaints in the public?
Not to my knowledge, Ranking Member. I do not know.
Are you aware of any cases like this that were put into the spotlight? Would this be the way to handle it out in the public like this?
I am not aware of any, but I want to say once again, I believe that the situation we have and why we're here this morning is because this case is unique and unprecedented.
So why are cases normally not handled out in the public?
All the other cases that came before either this committee or the Senate committee, whether or not they met the criteria of urgent concern, were forwarded because they involved members of the intelligence community who were, in fact, in organizations underneath the DNI's authority and responsibility. This one just did not come that way because it involved a member, an individual who is not a member of the intelligence community or an organization underneath the authority of the DNI. So this one is different from all others in the past that I am aware of.
So I want to get into how this all got out in the public over the last. This has basically been an orchestrated effort over 2 weeks. We were first told about it, a week and a half ago, and we were told very specifically that the whistleblower did not want to get any of this information out. They didn't want it to leak out. So there were only a few potential groups of people that would have known about this complaint. You and your people within your office.
Yes, sir.
The people within the Inspector General's office and the whistleblower and whoever that whistleblower gave this information to. So what I'm trying to ascertain is, how would it run in all the mainstream media outlets? How did they get, even though they got a lot of it wrong, but they had the basics of it, that it involved the President of the United States talking to a foreign leader. So did anybody, you or anybody in your office, leak this to the Washington Post or NBC News?
Ranking Member, I lead the intelligence community. We know how to keep a secret. As far as how that got into the press, I really do not know, sir. I just know that it's all over the place, and as you said, it's been reported by different media for the past several weeks. Where they get their information from, I don't know.
So that,
was,
you know,
but it was not from the intelligence community, from me, or from my office.
Thank you, Director. So this is not the first time this has happened to this president. That happened with a call between the Mexican president, the Australian prime minister. So it's happened twice before that pieces of transcripts leaked out. And, of course, this time it was leaked out again. And the president, thankfully, he was able to put this out because of the actions of this of the situation, as you said, that's unprecedented. Is it normal for the President of the United States to have their conversations leak out? This is the third time.
I would have to leave that to the White House to respond to that, their Ranking Member. But to me, the President of the United States' conversation with any other head of state I would consider privileged conversation.
But clearly, I mean, those conversations are being captured by the intelligence agencies. So...
Not necessarily, sir. I mean, if the president...
I should say this. They're captured and then disseminated. Captured and disseminated to the intelligence agencies.
I have to be careful in this open hearing about, you know, how I respond to that. The intelligence community and the National Security Agency, obviously, you know, they collect things that are to protect...
I just want to make sure, because are we just going to... Foreign leaders, when I just have either the president of the United States not talk to foreign leaders, or we should just... Or publish, just publish all the transcripts, because that's what's happening here.
Ranking member...
So, and somebody's leaking this, and it's likely coming from the agencies that you oversee.
Ranking member, sir...
I mean, I'm not saying that you don't know, but we had the transcript with the Mexican president, the Australian prime minister, and now contents of a call with the Ukrainian president leak out.
Ranking member, the allegation in the whistleblower complaint was that there were about 12 people who listened in on the conversation, members of the National Security Council and others. And then others were briefed from State Department as well of the transcripts, because if they have an area responsibility and a region responsibility, then they would be informed on the interaction. So there were a number of people that from the White House briefed from the call. This would not be something that...
I'm quite sure of this. The White House probably didn't leak this out.
I wouldn't say the White House, but there are individuals within the White House that may or may not. I don't know. But it would not be from an intelligence intercept. I will say that.
Right. I'm just saying the dissemination of these calls is supposed to be sacred, right? I mean, it is important for the State Department and the appropriate agencies to get. I'm not saying it's all in the intelligence agency, but when a president talks to a foreign leader, it's confidential. Those contents are confidential. There could be some facts of that conversation that you do want to get to the appropriate agency, not just the IC. I want to be clear about that, but this is now the third time. I'm not aware of this ever happening before, of contents of calls like this getting out.
I really don't know, Ranking Member. I'm not aware. I don't have the numbers to think. It just seems to me, though, that it is unprecedented. And I would also say, I think that the decision by the president yesterday to release the transcripts of his conversation with the president of the Ukraine is probably unprecedented as well.
Well, we appreciate you being here, and have fun. Be careful what you say, because they're going to use these words against you.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ranking Member, either way, I'm honored to be here, and I'm honored to be leading the intelligence.
Well, and I appreciate your service to this country for a long time, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. Hopefully not in the public, hopefully behind closed doors like this is supposed to be done.
Thank you very much, Ranking.
I yield back.
See, that's the key point. If you have a whistleblower making a complaint, it's handled behind closed doors in executive sessions. It's not in a public arena. Why do they want it in a public arena? They're using this as a club, or they thought they could use it as a club against Trump, but Trump called their bluff by declassifying confidential notes on this. And I have for new listeners, I always give you a lot of background information so you can make up your own mind. I have a copy of the complaint, and I think on the last show I have a copy of the transcript of the conversations. And it's unprecedented that you see the complaint as well as see a transcript or notes of what the president said in his conversation with the Ukrainian president Zelensky. It is unprecedented. And the reason why the president did it is to stop this. And now they're asking for more and more calls. I mean, the Democrats. They rush this. They're caught out in a lie. And let me show you the big lie. I call them big lie media that are propagating the big lies. I want you to listen to this. It's Adam Schiff, the chairman of that committee. And this is all over the news. If you just listen in, and many people were listening in, you would think this is the actual, he's reading the notes. And many people made that mistake. I was very suspicious of it because I frankly didn't think the president would have said it the way it was said. So I want you to listen to, this is Adam Schiff, chairman of this committee. Just listen.
Without objection, the chair reserves the right to recess the hearing at any time. The presidential oath of office requires the President of the United States to do two things: faithfully execute his or her office, and protect and defend the Constitution. That oath, of course, cannot be honored if the President does not first defend the country. If our national security is jeopardized, if our country is left undefended, the necessity to faithfully execute the office becomes moot. Where there is no country, there is no office to execute. And so the duty to defend the nation is foundational to the President's responsibilities. But what of this second responsibility, to defend the Constitution? What does that really mean? The founders were not speaking, of course, of a piece of parchment. Rather, they were expressing the obligation of the President to defend the institutions of our democracy, to defend our system of checks and balances that the Constitution enshrines, to defend the rule of law, a principle upon which the idea of America was born, that we are a nation of laws, not men. If we do not defend the nation, there is no Constitution. But if we do not defend the Constitution, there is no nation worth defending. Yesterday, we were presented with the most graphic evidence yet that the President of the United States has betrayed his oath of office, betrayed his oath to defend our national security, and betrayed his oath to defend our Constitution. For yesterday, we were presented with a record of a call between the President of the United States and the President of Ukraine, in which the President, our President, sacrificed our national security and our Constitution for his personal political benefit. To understand how he did so, we must first understand just how overwhelmingly dependent Ukraine is on the United States, militarily, financially, diplomatically, and in every other way. And not just on the United States, but on the person of the President. Ukraine was invaded by its neighbor, by our common adversary, by Vladimir Putin's Russia. It remains occupied by Russian irregular forces in a long simmering war. Ukraine desperately needs our help, and for years we have given it, and on a bipartisan basis. That is, until 2 months ago, when it was held up inexplicably by President Trump. It is in this context, after a brief congratulatory call from President Trump to President Zelensky on April 21st, and after the President's personal emissary, Rudy Giuliani, made it abundantly clear to Ukrainian officials over several months that the President wanted dirt on his political opponent, it is in this context that the new President of Ukraine would speak to Donald Trump over the phone on July 25th. President Zelensky, eager to establish himself at home as a friend of the President of the most powerful nation on earth, had at least two objectives: get a meeting with the President and get more military help. And so what happened on that call? Zelensky begins by ingratiating himself, and he tries to enlist the support of the President. He expresses his interest in meeting with the President and says his country wants to acquire more weapons from us to defend itself. And what is the President's response? Well, it reads like a classic organized crime shakedown. Shorn of its rambling character and in not so many words, this is the essence of what the President communicates. We've been very good to your country, very good. No other country has done as much as we have. But you know what? I don't see much reciprocity here. I hear what you want. I have a favor I want from you, though. And I'm going to say this only 7 times, so you better listen good. I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent, understand lots of it, on this and on that. I'm going to put you in touch with people, not just any people. I'm going to put you in touch with Attorney General of the United States, my Attorney General, Bill Barr. He's got the whole weight of the American law enforcement behind him. And I'm going to put you in touch with Rudy. You're going to love him, trust me. You know what I'm asking, and so I'm only going to say this a few more times, in a few more ways. And by the way, don't call me again. I'll call you when you've done what I asked. This is, in sum and character, what the president was trying to communicate.
I'm going to leave it there. Adam Schiff is lying. This is not what the president said. I think he's a fool because people can read exactly from the transcript. He was caught out. And when he was called on and he said it was a parody, Adam Schiff has no credibility. He should be fired, relieved of his duty as chairman of the Intelligence Committee. This is shameful activity. This is beyond the pale. Now, people make mistakes, but not in this kind of situation. This frankly disgusts me and a lot of other people that listen in. They couldn't believe it. It's apparent that the Democratic Party has been captured by the radical extremist Democrat Socialists. They want to use anything and everything, including lies and making it up as they go along, to try to impeach the President of the United States. They're not going to succeed. They know even if they could get passed, had the votes to get the articles of impeachment passed in the House, they'll never get a conviction in the Senate. This is not playing well with the American people, and this will damage the election of many of these people that were elected 2 years ago to the Congress in districts that heavily voted for Trump. So Adam Schiff, the irony here, did it to himself. His arrogance and really blindness to how this was going to go over is amazing. See, he knew he couldn't just read the actual words of the notes. He made this up. He fabricated, just like the Christopher Steele dossier was fabricated. This is shameful activity. If anyone should be impeached, it's this congressman. But he's up for re-election. I hope he's challenged and defeated. He should be. If he were my representative, I would definitely not vote for him. Got the signal. I got to wrap it up. I'll have more to say tomorrow. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With the voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProcPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.